Good afternoon, and welcome to VCY America's Homefront program. You know, it's suddenly beginning to at least feel a lot like Christmas here in beautiful Wisconsin. The snowbirds are headed south, the temperature is plummeting, and we've even had some snow, and Thanksgiving is now over. And speaking of Thanksgiving, thank you for joining us for today's program after a week off for Thanksgiving. I'm Jelaine Appling, one of the co-hosts, and I'm also President Emeritus of Wisconsin Family Council. Joining me in co-hosting Homefront is Daniel Degner, the new President of Wisconsin Family Council. Wisconsin Family Council is a statewide organization working to strengthen, preserve, and promote God's plan for marriage and family, the sanctity of human life, and religious freedom in our state. For over 38 years, we've been showing up, standing up, and speaking up on these foundational issues in the halls of government, in the media, in churches, and in the culture at large. And these are the issues we'll be talking about today, issues right here on our home front. So welcome, Daniel. I trust you had a good Thanksgiving with family and friends.
Yeah, thanks, Jelaine. It's good to be back after a short break. We did have a great Thanksgiving. It was so good to have both my family and my wife's family together in the home that my wife and I now live in, but that had been my grandparents, and where I had spent many Thanksgiving Day celebrations in the past. Now we move on to get ready for Christmas as well as the New Year.
Well, I'm so glad you had a family-centric Thanksgiving. That's certainly part of what Thanksgiving is all about. And yes, these last couple of months of the year always fly by. This time of year is, you know, such a joy for so many, but often it brings sadness as well for families that are grieving the loss of a loved one. And we certainly pray for the Prosser family here in Wisconsin in the passing of former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice David Prosser, who passed away this past Sunday.
Yeah, and as you know, Jelaine, David Prosser, he was quite a figure in Wisconsin politics for many years, especially for conservatives and Republicans. He served in the state assembly for 16 years, and he even served as assembly speaker for 1 year. In 1998, Governor Tommy Thompson appointed him to the state Supreme Court to fill a vacancy. Then Justice Prosser ran successfully two more times for a 10-year term on the high court. His last election was in 2011, which he narrowly won in the midst of all of the Act 10 controversies. Prosser eventually stepped down from the court in 2016 to retire. He was considered a conservative member of the court.
Well, we certainly extend our sympathy and our prayers to the Prosser family in this loss. You know, when Justice Prosser retired in 2016, that's when Governor Scott Walker appointed Dan Kelly to serve out the balance of Prosser's term. Of course, we know that Justice Kelly was a conservative justice, which means the balance of the court did not change with that appointment. It's interesting how these Supreme Court positions are so interrelated. And speaking of our state Supreme Court, I guess it's not too early to talk a little bit about the upcoming spring election, Daniel. But before we dive into that, we should quickly mention what's going on with Act 10, the collective bargaining reform legislation signed into law back in 2011 by Governor Scott Walker. An activist Dane County judge earlier this week determined some 60 parts of Act 10 to be unconstitutional, which in essence pretty much nullifies the law that has saved Wisconsin taxpayers billions of dollars.
Yeah, and our friends at Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty have pointed out that what this judge has done is substitute the judgment of the court for the judgment of the legislature, thereby allowing courts to undermine the whole entire legislative process. Will also has done some research into finding out the financial implications of having Act 10 undone. The reports they have done estimate about $1.1 billion in new annual costs for school districts and more than $480 million in new annual costs for local government. Of course, these costs will be passed on to we, the people, through new taxes. We anticipate that this ruling will be appealed, and we will closely be following it as it goes through the judicial process. This Act 10 issue is yet another reminder that elections have consequences. Remember, in Wisconsin, we elect all judicial positions, from municipal court right through the state Supreme Court. With that segue, we move into our spring election discussion.
Okay, let's start this by saying we know people are election weary, but there is some basic information we need to share right now because of important deadlines that are happening now or will be happening very soon. First, this spring we have our annual nonpartisan election. Any primaries for that election will be held on Tuesday, February 18th, with the general election taking place on Tuesday, April 1st. And this year we will have two statewide races on everyone's ballot. We'll be electing a state superintendent of public instruction for a 4-year term and a new justice for the Wisconsin Supreme Court for a 10-year term. In addition, we will have thousands of offices on the ballots at the local level, from mayors to alderpersons and village and town supervisors, from school board members to county offices and judicial positions. Really, this coming spring's election is big in many ways, especially that Supreme Court election, since it's an open seat with current Liberal Justice Ann Walsh Bradley not running again. This race once again has the potential of changing the balance of the court, now from liberal back to conservative. We'll talk more about that in the next couple of weeks. But right now, Daniel, we have some important deadlines we need to mention about this spring election.
That's right, Jolene. And people seeking to be on the ballot for this spring's election for any office need to declare that intention no later than Monday, January 7th. Many offices require that candidates get nomination papers with signatures submitted by that January 7th date. We recommend calling the pertinent clerk involved to find out about signatures. For instance, if you're thinking about running for school board, call the clerk of the school district to ask about signatures. If you're running for your city council or your town or village board, call the clerk to ask about signatures. Incumbents in these nonpartisan offices have until December 27th to notify the clerk if they will not be running in this spring's election. If they don't notify the clerk, the assumption is that they're running.
So why do we mention this process and these dates? Because we very well may have listeners who are thinking about running for a local office, or maybe they're already elected to such an office. Knowing or being reminded of the process and these dates may very well help them make a decision about running or not running. You know, I've said it many times, local government is a level of government that has the most direct impact on our lives, and it's where we have the most direct impact. Running for a local office is very doable for many people, especially those in smaller communities. Maybe you should be running, or maybe you know someone who would be great in one of these local offices. We encourage you to think and pray about that.
We also want to make sure you're getting the information you need as a voter so that you can choose well when you have the opportunity to vote in these two statewide races and the local races that will be on your ballot this spring. Speaking of local elections and local offices, we have some good news to report from the Watertown Unified School District here in Wisconsin. LifeSite News reports that the Watertown Unified School Board recently voted 8-1 to adopt a new gender support plan that restricts locker rooms, restrooms, and athletic programs to members of the designated biological sex. This reverses the previous policy in which gender-confused students were allowed to use whatever facilities or join whatever teams they wanted. The vote also gives school faculty and staff discretion in whether to use transgender names and pronouns, effective immediately.
Well, we praise God and we are thankful for this common sense decision. And we believe this represents a broader pushback against this radical gender ideology movement. We certainly hope to see more schools follow the example of the Watertown Unified School District. Parents at the meeting said they were relieved their daughters' sports, bathrooms, and personal privacy would be protected at school once again. And quite frankly, every parent should have that same assurance. Now, I happen to know that this happened in Watertown because some concerned parents and community members decided they were going to get informed and involved, and they did. Watertown School Board is not necessarily strongly conservative right now, but these concerned citizens got others informed and involved, and these folks contacted school board members, and they showed up at the meeting, and it really did make a huge difference.
Absolutely. Concerned citizens getting organized and showing up and speaking up has more influence at the local level than any other level of government. We know several churches and pastors in Watertown got involved with this issue, and we are very sure that that helped with this vote. We have another education-related item for today, and this one is about the Department of Public Instruction's new school report card. DPI released this new report card data recently, and it was obvious that DPI had unilaterally lowered academic standards, which of course protects poor-performing public schools. Our friends at Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty issued a statement criticizing DPI for creating an expectation of mediocrity in our school systems. Wool said changes to both the Ford exam and state report cards have created an accountability system that outright hides declining academic achievement.
Our schools should expect and encourage excellence from students, not mediocrity. DPI attempting to hide the academic decline helps no one, and it actually is a disservice to students and to parents who want the best education for their children. Will is right. The legislature should rein in DPI's ability to unilaterally change accountability standards. Until there is some stability in the standards we hold schools to, no one really has any way of determining how schools are actually doing. Changing the standards to accommodate and cover up poor performance is wrong and, in my opinion, deceitful.
Now, this is definitely something the state legislature should look into during this upcoming new session that begins in just a few weeks. We have state representatives and senators who I'm sure will be open to having serious conversations about what DPI is doing with these test and report card standards and reporting. The real question will be, what will Governor Evers do? His history, unfortunately, tells us he would likely veto any bill that reins in DPI on this matter or any other matter. Remember, he's the former state superintendent of public schools, and his track record there and as governor is pretty clear that he wants less legislative involvement in public schools, but wants the legislature to appropriate more money for these schools, failing or otherwise.
We'll see what the legislature and the governor does on this issue. But we do have a couple more good news items to share today. The first one deals with some awards given to several Wisconsin families recently. Late last month, in keeping with National Adoption Month, Governor Evers and the Department of Children and Families Secretary Designee awarded 10 adoptive, guardianship, foster, and relative caregiver families by presenting them with the 2024 Governor's Outstanding Foster and Adoptive Family Award. Families from communities all across the state were recognized for going above and beyond to keep children safe and connected with their families.
This is indeed good news. Children are typically the innocent victims in situations where foster care, adoption, or other options are necessary. It's very encouraging to know we have many families stepping up to help meet the needs of these children, and where possible, working with the children's biological families. Our hope is other Wisconsin families will be encouraged to do the same. Churches that encourage families to get involved with adoption and foster care make a huge difference in families in those churches considering adoption or being foster parents.
And speaking of families, we have some good news to report on the economic scene in our state. The Wisconsin Policy Forum reports that state and local taxes in 2022 totaled just 9.9% of personal income, a record low for our state. That was driven by rising incomes, state caps on property taxes, and an income tax cut. This dropped Wisconsin to the 35th highest state and local tax burden, another all-time low. WisPolitics reports this continued a two-decade trend of Wisconsin going down in the rankings of the highest tax states. In 2000, we ranked third highest in the nation.
Even though some state and local tax revenues increased amid inflation, they were far below national rates. We hope to see this pattern of low taxation continues in years to come in order to help families remain or become independent of government. We know that independent families make for a strong state, and a strong state benefits everyone. It really does all begin with families. And with that, we're out of time. As always, if Wisconsin Family Council can help you with any of the issues we've talked about, or to find out how you can support our efforts to strengthen, preserve, and promote our shared values, please call us at 888-378-7395 or visit us online at wifamilycouncil.org. Thanks for listening. This is Daniel Degner and Jelaine Appling for Wisconsin Family Council, reminding you that God, through the prophet Hosea, said, "My people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge."